Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 10th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of John, and we'll be reading tonight, I think, chapter 14. Hang on a minute. Yeah, I believe we are. Thought we read that last week, but I'm pretty sure I changed this. So, pretty sure it's John chapter 14 we'll be reading in. So here it is, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 14. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And whither I go, ye know, and the way ye know. Thomas saith unto him, Lord, we know not whither thou goest, and how can we know the way? Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. If ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also, and from henceforth ye know him and have seen him. Philip saith unto him, Lord, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. Jesus saith unto him, Have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, Show us the Father? Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? The words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very works' sake. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do. Because I go unto my Father. And whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If ye shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. If ye love me, keep my commandments. And I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another Comforter, that he may abide with you forever. Even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But ye know him, for he dwelleth with you, and shall be in you. I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. Yet a little while, and the world seeth me no more, but ye see me. Because I live, ye shall live also. And that day ye shall know that I am in my Father, and ye in me, and I in you. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him, and will manifest myself to him. Judas saith unto him, not Iscariot, Lord, how is it that thou wilt manifest thyself unto us, and not unto the world? Jesus answered and said unto him, If a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him. And we will come unto him, and make our abode with him. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings, and the word which ye hear is not mine, but the Father's which sent me. These things have I spoken unto you, being yet present with you. But the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things, and bring all things to your remembrance, whatsoever I have said unto you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Ye have heard how I said unto you, I go away and come again unto you. If ye loved me, ye would rejoice, because I said, I go unto the Father, for my Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it come to pass, that when it is come to pass, ye might believe. Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of this world cometh, and hath nothing in me. But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, even so I do. Arise, let us go hence.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
Yes, we do, John.
Okay.
The first question. A couple Monday nights ago, one of the moderators mentioned they have a Wednesday night meetup from 11 a.m. Excuse me, Wednesday meetup from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Could someone forward me the link where to go to get on it? Could that be Gerard and Ollie and Terry's?
Yeah, that might be. Terry, do you want to tell people on how they can connect with you guys on Wednesdays?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
We can hear you.
Okay. It is on Patriot Soapbox. I don't know how to get the information out to you. I guess I'll make a page, but I'm not really into that.
Maybe you can get the info to Jan also, and he can post it on our Monday, on our weekly letter. But
I will get it to Jan. There's two that I know of, Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N .live/PSB, all little letters, and DLive, Delta Lima India Victor Echo, DLive.tv/PSB. Either one of those will get you to it. It's from 9, oh, that's my time. It's from 11 a.m. on Wednesdays Eastern Time to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday. So there you go.
Okay, thank you. And Jan, put something into the newsletter for the link for that. Also on Wednesday, we do have a Bible study. Anybody interested in that? That's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here in this program in the Stop Meeting Room. Okay, go ahead, Jan.
Okay, this next one, I'm not sure what to do with, John. It's 2.5 pages. It deals with a attempt to use common law against the IRS.
And yeah, I saw that come in. I think there's one page, and then the second page is like about 8 or 9 questions. Is that the one you're looking at?
It has like 5 questions, but it's more than one page. It's about 2.5 pages of text. And then questions. You want me to read
them? Do you want to read it? And, well, let's read it, yeah. And we'll see once what I can comment on that.
Okay. Just before joining NLA, I came along with one other person, helped put together a common law claim. Bill Thornton says claim is correct term to use under common law. With the assistance of a man that works with Bill Thornton for a couple in Washington State that are being pursued by the IRS. Claimants each delivered a revocation of election per Title 26 U.S.C. 6013G to establish their correct jurisdiction as outside the taxing authority of the IRS regarding tax on their labor. This revocation of election documents in the nature of sworn affidavits were never rebutted by the commissioner of the IRS or any other delegate within the IRS. These documents were delivered in March 2022, effective starting January 1, 2021. Therefore, claimants have not filed tax returns for the year 2021 and beyond. Claimants challenged as two of the people that there did not exist any law that identified them as persons required to file any 1040 returns. Soon after filing their revocation of election, IRS audited them for tax year 2020, then 2021 through 2023. We received a template for a common law claim from the man I mentioned was helping us that he received from Bill Thornton. Talked with the couple regarding damages and wrote the claim. The couple subsequently were able to file it with the Superior Court in Clark County, Washington, where they live, on January 17, 2025. The judge signed off on the claim and the summons for all seven defendants. All have been served. The defendants consisted of four IRS employees, one of which is an IRS attorney who issued several color of law administrative summonses against the couple to appear for audits. The other two are a credit union manager and one employee from the same credit union, and the other one from the wife's work, HR department. The IRS attorney is in Oregon, and she was served by professional process server. All others were served by the sheriff within Washington State. This case is nearly identical to the IRS case you mentioned in the course. The IRS served a color of law notice of lien to the couple's credit union, and the credit union complied with the IRS without a signed court order. Previously, the IRS had been issuing fraudulent administrative summonses to the couple to appear for audits for months, and finally threatened to criminally prosecute them in federal district court if they failed to appear again. Where was it? This is one of the reasons why we filed the claim to stop enforcement actions. The first problem started when they filed the claim. On the court's cover sheet, they do not have an option for common law. The closest thing they had was miscellaneous/civil. And that's what the couple checked off. Then the court wants the names of the attorneys representing them on the cover sheet, and the couple put in the names of the other two people I'm working with because they were confused. They went back later and had the cover sheet changed to remove the names. I believe the court may be seeing this as a civil action and applying civil law to it. The summons also read civil action and identifies the claim as a complaint. I believe this triggered our next problem. The couple received a notice of appearance from a law firm claiming to be representing two of the defendants, the manager and another employee of the credit union. We know we need to correct the court record of the jurisdiction to common law and respond to the attorney's attempt to trespass the case without jurisdiction. The attorney's reference in the notice of appearance they filed on February 3rd, defendants do not waive any defenses, including those based on lack of jurisdiction, improper venue, or insufficient service process. They're clearly confused and think this is a civil action, and they list the claimants as pro se's, another trespass. The couple are going to go to the court and ask to talk to the clerk of the court to verify the court sees, knows their document is a common law jurisdiction court of record, so we can write orders from our court to strike the notice of appearance documents submitted by the attorneys and order them to cease and desist trespassing the case or face sanctions. Five of the defendants will be defaulted Wednesday the 12th, and the IRS attorney will be defaulted Friday the 14th. We would like to file for default judgments if they don't answer. In the claim we chose on counsel from the man helping us to use the federal rules of civil procedure for our court proceedings. We were told this is best because if a trial becomes necessary, this will make it very easy for the magistrate to know how to conduct a trial efficiently. For this reason, I believe we now need to follow FRCP process for our default judgments against the defendants. But I'm not sure because this is the first common law action I've ever worked on. First question. Because we chose federal rules of civil procedure for our court, I will follow those rules for obtaining a default judgment. Is this correct?
Yeah, no, I would not use or make note of using the federal rules of civil procedure at all. Too many problems with the federal rules of civil procedure. But I have in cases made the point that I would accept any federal rule, you know, the civil procedure, if it was in line with the common law. But you don't want to really accept the rules per se because, again, they have all kinds of problems in them.
Okay. Can we write an order from our court to the attorneys that are trespassing our case to cease and desist or face sanctions?
Well, I don't know how. I didn't hear any information on what would give me an idea or thinking that that they were trespassing on the case, so I don't understand the question really on that one.
Okay, then, Nick, should we file a motion to strike the attorney's notice of appearance for lack of jurisdiction from our document?
Again, I don't think I have much information on that, but the bottom line is that they did say, I presumed, that they were being sued in the USC 26 court or they were suing in the federal court. What was the position on that? Were they being sued or they were sued? Or countersuit? Did they say?
Well, they're filing against the IRS.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if it's a countersuit.
Doesn't say.
Okay. Well, I'm not too sure on how to answer that question. Don't have enough information on that one either. But I would say one thing. If you are brought into that court, you know, it's a tax court. Every federal court building has a tax court in it. You have a special court, a specific, you know, court within that's referred to and used only for tax. So that's the facade they set up to make it look like it's a federal court, but it's not a federal court, it's a private court. And it's just being housed by the federal district. And, you know, I know if I was to be pulled into that court again, you know, I've been in that court before, but if I were to be pulled into that court again, I would move it to federal court for cause for denial of due process because that court under USC 26 cannot give you due process. Any court that runs by statutes cannot give you due process. They're fixed, and so there is no due process. There is no, you know, they make the claim, that's it. There is no argument against those laws. But again, that's about as far as I can go on that question. Next.
Okay. If this goes to a jury trial, what beyond acting as counsel can the bar attorneys do in our court of record?
Read that question again. I'm not sure I understand that.
If this case goes to a jury trial, what beyond acting as counsel can the bar attorneys do in our court of record?
And I presume they're talking about bar attorneys that they're using or bar attorneys that would be prosecutors or defendants on the other side of things. I'm not sure who they're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in any event, you know, again, USC 26 is not law. It says it is not positive law. It's not listed among all of the, you know, the USC, all of the codes as positive law. About half of the codes that are written are not positive law. 26 is one. As a matter of fact, within 26, it says that it is not law. So there is no application of USC 26 that could be used in a court. It's all gibberish to begin with. But you know, there are certain things that can be used within their system that could be used against them. But anyway, I guess that's all I could say because I'm not sure, you know, what the position is on that, on the attorneys. But go ahead. Next.
Okay, next question. Is it likely the U.S. attorney will try to move our action to federal court?
I thought they were in federal court, so I guess they're in a state court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if they're in a state court, absolutely. If you're suing the IRS or you're suing, the IRS, I guess, I would never sue the IRS directly if that's what they're doing. I would sue the individuals for stepping outside of their authority. Because you're not going to win a case, and it's too difficult to deal with that kind of a problem or situation. And so there's no doubt about it. If you sue them in a state court, there's no doubt about it that the attorney for the IRS will definitely move it into their federal court district so that they can deal with it in the federal level. So again, I don't know. It sounds like they just filed the papers, because that usually happens very quickly. So, but go ahead. Next.
Okay. They had picked out four people, and I thought someone heard said seven people they were suing. Individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next question. This is from the interim attorney general with Washington State's Republic, as well as a member of NLA. And it says, I think you may be one of the very few people in this nation of ours who has the ability and gumption to respond to the Supreme Court's decision to deny an audit to the Treasury for the purpose of exposing the fraud and theft at the highest levels. This does appear to be an area in which the people's grand jury may have an upper hand in the debacle that is before our nation at this point. May I petition you to begin a work on this so that the people's voice might be heard on high? One last thing. We disagree about the working relationship and commonality between the COSs and the assemblies. I do continue in the insistence, that these work in a fashion intended to be side by side, and in fact would better serve the people of this nation by doing so. That is just something I'm addressing for the hope that we begin to work together in bringing our republic back into full swing, and for your serious consideration. My former thought concerning the Supreme Court decision is that the main focus I'd like to have your attention on. Your position allows for our voice to be made heard through your grand jury installation. Maybe having a grand jury decision signed by all 25 jurors in tandem with a petition signed by several thousand Americans in support of the document for submission would be more effective. What do you think?
Well, we've already filed against the IRS per se in our when we went and filed our papers in the United States Supreme Court, and we laid out that particular problem with the IRS. They don't have that. USC 26 is not law. We put a memorandum in there, and we did put some language in there. Trump is in the process of getting rid of the IRS. He must get rid of the IRS. He doesn't have a choice but to get rid of the IRS. The reason I say that is because he's bringing us back to the Constitution. And he's doing things a little at a time. He's trying to give some relief to the people right now concerning the IRS. But at the end of the results, it's going to be gone. And I think it's going to be a couple of months from now before he addresses that on a bigger level. So there's nothing for us to do at this moment. If something comes up that we should do something, we will do something. Right now, we're looking at some other things to do, and we're going to be talking about that tonight probably at least a bit. We'll see where we go with that. But again, we've already served notice on this stuff, we've filed a lot of papers with the United States Supreme Court, and we'll see where we go with it. But I do want to make one other point. I know Thornton mentioned coming in with a claim. I wouldn't use the word claim. I disagree with him on that. I would use action at law. They do try to turn the claim into a complaint, and that brings us into civil law. and I think claim, I'd have to look at the word claim, maybe look at it in Black's Law or Bovier's to see if there's any kind of information on the meaning of a claim. I do know a complaint does bring you into the statutory process as far as being civil law. Action at law is very clear. And that's what I would call it, an action at law, because an action at law is really, it just says again, it's a common law process. It is a court of record. And, of course, the word court of record needs to be used at the first sentence of your paperwork as you're filing into the court, that you're suing this individual, that individual, in this court of record for, and then what you're suing them for. And up on the top right side of the filing, it should say court of record and define that court of record, or you can do trial by jury also, and of course that is what a court of record is a trial by jury. But I would do court of record and then define it in the footnote, and also make mention that it is a trial by jury. All right.
Yeah, that was the previous question, John. This one was. Respond to the Supreme Court's decision to deny an audit of the Treasury.
Oh, he's looking to audit the Treasury? That's what he's talking
about?
Yeah,
in the news today, I believe it was, or several days ago, Supreme Court apparently says you can't audit the Treasury.
That's something in process right now. And, of course, again, the end results of all this is going to be the IRS is gone. And the reason I say that is because, again, Trump is pushing for the Constitution. The Constitution is crystal clear that no direct tax is possible. We are addressing a little of this in a paper that we wrote, and we're going to look at tonight a little bit and see once where we go with it. So we'll talk a little more about that shortly.
The last comment here is for Linda from Virginia that called in last week. She's on the call tonight. She talked about a distant past tax debt being pressed upon her. This is also for anyone else out there that have a similar situation or want to know more about income tax. This person has mentioned the name Dave Champion once or twice before on the calls. And he believes, or he's encouraging, that NLA bring him on for an interview to clarify the true application of the income tax. He has an excellent book titled Income Tax Sheltering the Myths. He's also extremely, well-versed on the subject of the 14th Amendment, clarifying the many misconceptions surrounding it as well. Another great and easy read, short book on the income tax truth is a Tax Honesty Primer by Dave Zuniga. So, for whatever. No question.
Okay.
That's the end of the questions.
All right. Well, again, we're going to address that a little bit tonight. We'll see how far we go with this. And let me just open up the queue. Now, I'm going to take a look at a paper that we wrote. I was looking to send it out today. I never got around to getting it done today, just too many things going on, and I was still proofreading it. And I also have a couple other people taking a look to see once what they think. But I'm going to read it tonight. I'll see how far we go reading this tonight, because I do want to respond to people who might have questions or comments. And hopefully people will have comments or questions or thoughts about the paper we're going to take a look at. It's a presentment to the President of the United States. And I think the timing is really coming in at the right time. We've been filing certain papers and copying President and Musk and about 25 or 30 other people that are within, many of them that are in Trump's administration. And some senators, some congressmen that are friendly to our cause. But let me start with this paper, and we'll see where we go. I don't know that I'm going to get through the whole paper. I may even skip some parts to get to other parts. I'll see where we go with that. I do have some red-lined words in here and some blue-lined words in here because there were some correction changes I have made, And until this paper is ready to go out, which I think it is ready to go out for tomorrow morning, hopefully, I'll start printing it up. I'll see what happens. But anyway, and I did get to one other person who thought that the paper was probably good the way it is, so we'll see where we go. Okay, so this is an extraordinary presentment, and it comes now, and this is to, of course, the President of the United States. Comes now, the Constituted Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, here and after we the people, for an unprecedented presentment to President Donald J. Trump. What the prosecutors and judges have done to you, Mr. President, they have been doing to we the people for a very long time. There is no justice in our courts, none. If we, the people, do not take back our federal courts of justice, all your work is in vain. These federal court officers have abrogated the law of the land, also known as common law or natural law, replacing it with civil law. They have abrogated habeas corpus. They have abrogated the Bill of Rights, replacing it with civil rights. They have abrogated our courts of justice, translating them into chancery courts. They have turned everything upside down. Where the servant judges judge their masters, being we the people, this ought not to be. Common sense, also known as common law, does not permit this. As the Second Amendment provides enforcement for the other nine federal courts of justice that we the people vested under Article 3, Section 1 with judicial powers ought to champion the rights of we the people, thereby preventing unjust acts in the state courts by the status quo, whereas these tyrant judges do not. Article 3, Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law arising under the Constitution. 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 114. As to the construction with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted this destruction of the abatement of nuisances by summary proceedings. And it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. And although there is no common law of the United States in the sense of a national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England, adopted in the several states, in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. The U.S. Constitution being a common law document and the supreme law of the land that we the people codified under Article 4, Article 6, Clause 2, demands obedience to the law of the land that we the people codified and secured under Article 3, Section 2, must be acknowledged by the judiciary, who has a duty to secure a common law republican form of government that we the people codified under Article 4, Section 4. Whereas all cases at law within constitutional guarantee of a jury trial refers to common law actions as distinguished from the causes in equity and certain other proceedings. An Amendment 7 in suits of common law where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Therefore, by law, our courts must proceed under common law and the rules of common law, not under judicial comity, not under civil law defined under the repugnant Rule 2 that just completely altered our Constitution, nullifying our unalienable rights by judicial rule. Additionally, precedents, also known as case law, is foreign and repugnant to the common law and is in direct conflict with the rules of the common law. The doctrine of precedents, also known as comity, falsely claims that a defining characteristic of comity provides predictability, stability, fairness, and efficiency in the law. This is a lie from Hades. It just provides more control and is in conflict with the common law maxim, a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. There is no statute or common law rule by which one court is bound to abide by the decisions of another court of equal rank. By the way, that's what comity is. There is no common law or statutory rule for a court to bow to its own decisions. It lacks common sense. which is the driving force of common law. As a matter of fact, judges are not permitted to make summary judgment at all in a court of law. Only the tribunal, being we the people, or being the people themselves, have that power. Unfortunately, bar lawyers are taught and believe that common law has been abrogated, or that common law is the product of case law, which is judicial comity, and that we are under civil law, also known as Roman law. Under the American Bar Association's driven 1934 Rules Enabling Act, the 73rd Congress unlawfully enabled the United States Supreme Court the authority to prescribe rules under 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072A, thereby abrogating the rules of common law. The United States Supreme Court and federal judiciary then covertly abused their authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land under Federal Rule 2. According to the Federal Judicial Center, a government agency, on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its de facto authority under the Repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934 via Rule 2, stated that the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits in common law were grouped together under the term civil action, claiming that rigid application of common law rules brought about injustice. And we attached an exhibit concerning that, thereby altering the law of the land to civil law, an abomination to liberty. This was an act of treason, whereas any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. Cooper versus Aaron. The ABA, judiciary's dark reasoning for abolishing common law is because they claim that a rigid application of common law rules, also known as God's self-evident truths and maxims, brought about injustice. This is absurd, considering that God is good, just, and merciful, and they are not. And therefore it follows that his law is just and merciful, while the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? Jeremiah 17:7-9. Blessed is the man that trusts in the Lord. And whenever you see the Lord in caps, it's Jehovah. So trusteth in Jehovah, and whose hope Jehovah is, for he shall be as a tree planted by the water, and that spreadeth out her root by the river, and shall see when heat cometh. But her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the years of the drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruits. The heart is desperately above all things, and desperately wicked. Who could know it? Let me correct that. The heart is deceitful above all things, desperately wicked. Who could know it? The truth of the matter is that common law sheds light on the ABA's judiciary's dark deeds, thereby revealing their true intentions. Their claim that common law rules brought about injustice was an act of deflection, whereas their civil law rules bring about injustice. This seditious act, under the teaching and guidance of the Subversive American Bar Association and other anti-constitutional associations, executed a silent coup by claiming the abrogation of common law with its unalienable rights that were endowed upon us by our Creator, and covertly substituted them with civil rights legislated by lawless men. Since 1938, all bar members are taught and believe that we are under civil law, which they call Roman law, also known as Justinian law, which is just repackaged Babylonian law. That changed our courts of justice to chancery courts, and our unalienable rights to civil rights granted by and subject to the will of a judge, also known as a chancellor, to grant or not, all of which is repugnant to the common law of the land, also known as the laws of nature, whereas civil law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established particularly for itself, more properly called municipality law or municipal law, to distinguish it from the laws of nature and from international law. I'm going to skip some of these here so we can catch up a little further. In contrast, law found in Article 3, Section 1, Clause 2 is the law of the land, which is defined as, in Bouvier's, at law. This phrase is used to point out that thing, that a thing is to be done according to the course of the common law. It is distinguished from proceeding in equity. Black's law, and equity, of course, is legislated law. Black's law, all cases at law within the constitutional guarantee of a jury trial refers to common law actions as distinguished from the cause in equity and certain other precedents. Proceedings. Common law is distinguished from equity. Law is a body of rules and principles, written or unwritten, which are of fixed and immutable authority and which must be applied to controversies rigorously and in their entirety and cannot be modified to suit the particularities of a specific case. Right there it talks about the fact that comity, you know, is not to be applied. Or colored by any judicial discretion. Judges have to be silent in a court of law. And which rests confessably upon customs or statutes as distinguished from any other claim to ethical superiority. So in other words, all those things are not permitted in a common law court. In a court of law, the people are the tribunals that apply common sense, also known as common law, to the facts and decide guilt or innocence and the penalty with an eye on restitution. And the consideration of mercy, not fines and not necessarily jail sentences. Simply put, common law is simply the laws that God wrote into our hearts, coupled with the application of common sense, without any interference from judges, statutes, regulations, comity, or statutory rules that judges apply as law. Romans 2:14. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts. Equity is legislative law, which places the people under the thumb of Congress, and comity and rules place the people under the thumb of the bar-controlled courts, which is law from the bench, whereas both are repugnant to the common law. In courts of law, there are no statutes. There are no self-serving rules that are applied as law. There are no bar judges. There are no bending the knee to a trial judge's decision or their repugnant de facto equity rules. Bar-taught lawyers are so brainwashed, thereby not understanding of common law. They think common law is Roman law, and they refuse to reconsider what they have been falsely taught. Equity, which is to maintain control of commercial activities and government agencies, is also under the natural law republic, and is to proceed under the rules of common law, by which all legislation is judged, as it was before the de facto 1938 repugnant rules, when that encroached upon and corrupted our courts of justice. The state's courts have followed suit and are as out of control and destructive to our liberties as the federal courts are. All these courts deny a Bill of Rights, and anyone who challenges their unjust civil law with their repugnant rules are met with vindictiveness. There is only one way that we can take back our state courts, and that requires just federal courts, because all these state courts are chancery courts, thereby denying due process. We need federal courts that will champion the Constitution as we codified under Article 3, Section 2. And when this is achieved, or when that is achieved, we can move our cases from state courts into federal courts for the denial of due process, which will force these state courts to open courts of justice or cease and desist. A case in point. Now, this case here, you know, I want to look a little deeper into. There was a woman that came on to our program 2 weeks ago. I was kind of hoping she'd be in last week. I didn't hear from her to give us some more information, because we spoke about this individual who was put in jail when he was 19 years old, which I'm going to read in a second. So if you're in the room tonight, maybe you can get into the queue and we could talk a little bit about that case. But anyway, there is a case we're looking into where a 19-year-old was convicted by a judge 50 years ago and was given two life sentences without the aid of a jury. Now, maybe he deserves such a punishment, but the law of the land requires that only the people can pronounce a sentence. In this case, the person pleaded guilty, but no servant judge has such powers. They just took it, because the people, by design, have been kept ignorant to the law, even though the person pleaded guilty. It is the people's duty to make such a decision after hearing from the victims, the witnesses, and the accused. And after that, mercy must be considered or not. Now, how is it logically possible that a servant judge can judge a free man, also known as their master? U.S. Constitution, preamble, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. Only a jury of the accused peers can deliberate any judgment. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy trial and a public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, with which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusations, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Abrogation of habeas corpus by the federal judiciary. In the United States, habeas corpus exists in two forms, common law and statutory. The Constitution for the United States of America acknowledges the people's right to the common law of England, as it was in 1789. It does not consist of absolute, fixed, and inflexible rules, but broad and comprehensive principles based on justice, reason, and common sense. Miller versus Munson. It is our 12 years of documented experience that the federal courts prevent every habeas corpus that we the people filed in violation of Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. The federal courts have ignored and concealed or removed this grand jury's filings in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071, which states, whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys, or attempts to do so, or with the intent to do so, takes and carries away any record, proceeding, map, book, paper, document, or other thing filed or deposited with any clerk or officer at any court of the United States or in public office, or with any judicial or public officer of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Whereas the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the three of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or a referee between the government and the people. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope of the power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and the manner in which that power is exercised. Unlike a court, whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants assurance that it is not. That's U.S. versus Williams. This is the power of the people. This is the government by consent that the bar-controlled courts have stolen from we the people, and we demand its return. A recent case in point. We have a recent case where we filed a habeas corpus via an ex-friend on behalf of Aldo, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, I'm not going to pronounce it, Aldo, in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, federal case number, or on a contempt of court charge, a misdemeanor charge, in a chancery court with the next hearing dated December 2025, that's a year from now, and a $1 million purge bond on a misdemeanor, which clearly is vindictive. Whereas on January 28, 2025, three individuals, one the next friend, on behalf of the petitioner, Aldo, went into the United States District Court for the Eastern District to deliver a writ habeas corpus that the grand jury prepared. When presented for a judge's signature, the clerk informed the next friend that the judge signed to the case was not available that day. The next friend requested any judge that was available because habeas corpus by law requires a hearing within 3 days. The clerk called his supervisor, and her assistant, and they took the habeas corpus to go to talk to a judge, and came back and told the next friend that a judge was not available. The next friend asked her when he might be available or if we could make an appointment, and she said she already answered the question. The next friend asked for the name of the judge that was refusing to address the habeas corpus. His name was Judge Lawrence Lenard. After the next friend informed them that they were not following the law, she then had an armed deputy or marshal named Dale Spatz, who stood behind the next friend and was told by the clerk that the next friend is to leave the building. The armed deputy or marshal then threatened to physically remove the next friend as she was asking for any judge to execute the habeas corpus. Then Troy, who had accompanied the next friend, stepped forward and explained that the next friend was only asking questions and that there was no need to physically remove them from the building. He explained that we were simply citizens exercising our rights. The next friend left the paperwork with the supervisor and added a phone number to it and asked that they call the next friend when they get a response from the judge. As of today, which would be tomorrow's date, it has been 14 days and still no response from the court. We, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, have filed 34 habeas corpuses with the same kind of results. The habeas corpuses are ignored and concealed. Because all these federal courts act in concert, denying due process, revealing their lack of respect for the law and the people, thereby demonstrates conspiracy. Debtors' prisons. On another issue, as best as we can tell, there are more than 1,000 people in prison for what the IRS calls tax evasion and are convicted for standing on the law and U.S. Supreme Court rulings, whereas in fact these people are in debtors' prisons, being housed by the federal prisons. Every federal district provides a facade court room called a tax court that operates outside the law under USC 26, which is an enigma. Title 26 has not been enacted. It is not positive law. It is 6,496 pages of gibberish. The tax court is at best, I don't know if anybody's ever read that stuff, it's insane. The tax court is at best an administrative court. While it claims to be an Article I court, while in fact there is absolutely no constitutional authority for the creation of a tax court or the so-called Article I court, whereas Article I, Section 8, Clause 9 states the Congress shall have the power to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, which gives Congress the power to create courts as per Article 3, Section 1. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges both of the Supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior. And we the people describe the jurisdictions as follows. Section 2. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, the treaties made therein, of which shall be made under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and councils, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between the states and the citizens of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens in the same state claiming land under grants of different states and between a state or the citizen thereof and foreign states, citizens or subjects. And I know there was a change on that as far as, the people being tried in a federal court. But anyway, nowhere in the Constitution did we the people ordain and establish tax courts. As a matter of fact, we specifically denied it when we ordained Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9, no captation or other direct taxes shall be laid unless by in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Which means ultimately the state pays the tax. They'd enumerate how many people are in the state, and maybe the federal government may want a $5 tax on every head or whatever they may claim, and it's up to the state to collect those taxes, probably through sales tax or other legal taxes, and then deliver that to the federal government. That's what that section is actually saying. All courts that operate under statutes are equity courts, also known as administrative courts, also known as nisi prius courts, and therefore courts not of record. They do not have the power to fine or incarcerate for contempt, which is the predicate of a court of law alone. This, of course, extends to fines and imprisonments because statutes lack due process. That's a very important paragraph to understand. I'm going to reread this paragraph. It's a small one, and it's extremely important. And hear what it's really saying. All courts that operate under statutes are equity courts, also known as administrative courts, also known as nisi prius courts, and therefore courts not of record. Does any court that's not a court of record this applies to? They do not have the power to fine or incarcerate for contempt, which is the prerogative of a court of law alone. That's a court of record. This extends, of course, to fines and imprisonment because statutes lack due process. Black's Law states, courts of record and courts not of record, the former being those whose acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for a perpetual memory and testimony, and which have the power to fine or imprison for contempt. Errors lie to their judgment, and they generally possess a seal. Courts not of record are those of inferior dignity, which have no power to fine or imprison, and in which the proceedings are not enrolled or recorded. Okay. So if you have an equity court open, and an equity court may be applied upon an individual who is operating some commercial activity, maybe interstate in this case with the federal level, or maybe they're working for some government agency, and if they violate a code or a statute or whatever the case may be, of course they have certain powers that they could do concerning that. But once it becomes criminal, that court now has to be moved over into a court of law and tried by a jury. And the jury has the power of nullification, but that other court does not have the power to put anyone in prison or to fine them, particularly in the case of contempt. But again, that extends on to the fact that they don't have the power to fine or incarcerate under any conditions, because that's taken away someone's unalienable right. That can only be done by the people, so the people appeal of their peers. I'm going to skip some of these and move on. Furthermore, all United States codes that have been enacted by Congress and are not repugnant to the Constitution and the rules of common law, common sense, are a part of the law of the land under equity within its proper USC jurisdiction. Therefore, USC 26 is not law, and if it was, it would be repugnant to the Constitution because it creates a direct tax that we the people codified to be unlawful in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4. Where we said no captation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion, census, enumeration herein before directed to be taken. The United States Supreme Court clarified this point when it said the 16th Amendment does not justify the taxation of persons or things previously immune. It was intended only to remove all occasions for any of the apportionment of income taxes among the states. It does not authorize a tax on a salary. Congress cannot, by any definition or income in this case, it may adapt, conclude the matter, since it cannot be legislated, by legislation alter the Constitution from which alone it derives its power to legislate. And within those limitations alone, that power can be lawfully expressed. In construing federal revenue statutes, Supreme Court gives no weight to Treasury regulations, which attempt to add to statutes something which is not there. Okay, you know, it's good for me to read this out loud because it helps me to find errors and things that are out of maybe harmony. Some of this stuff, I think I have to move into a different place and put it into... Well, I got to move a few things around, my point. But I'm not going to remove any of the words that we've gotten here. All right, I'm going to skip some of this here and move down. In light of the aforesaid... We the people ask that you consider pardoning all these people that have been unlawfully imprisoned. We also request that you consider pardoning a pardon for those people who are serving time for possessing a firearm, having no criminal intent. whereas the common law requires that in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And without intent, there is no crime. Moreover, we the people have an unalienable right to possess a firearm, even if we cross state lines with a firearm. We read, Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Federal judges are tyrants. There is not one federal judge, and this is really what the paper is all about, okay, because we need our courts back. And this is the only way possible to take our courts back. That's what we're laying out. There is not one federal judge that is not beholden to the insidious bar-created system and therefore must be removed. A federal court system that ignores the law of the land as they incarcerate people for code violations that was meant for fictions, not sovereigns. Even when a person working for a fiction is charged with a crime, the equity court must yield to a court of law where the jury has the power of nullification. They apply civil law statutes as they conceal our courts of justice, opening chancery courts, also known as kangaroo courts, as they taint and stack the juries, railroading the people who are thorns in their side, because they stand on the Constitution and U.S. Supreme Court rulings, whereas they have robbed the kings of our court, Jesus Christ, by seizing the king's bench, the jury. They have refused assent to the laws of nature. They abrogated the law and replaced it with Babylonian law. They have trodden upon the rights of the people. They have legislated from the bench via comedy and with their insidious rules. They have prevented victims of government wrongdoings from holding the government accountable. They have fashioned sweeping doctrines of immunity that insulate themselves. They obstruct the administration of justice by refusing acquiescence to the law. They transform judges into chancellors dependent upon the will of the bar. They joined with foreign bankers, subjecting us to jurisdictions unknown. They enforce direct taxes, fees, and fines on us without our consent. They charge us fees for the right of due process and then give us chancery courts. They deprive us of their benefits of fully informed petit juries. They deprive us of the benefits of unrigged, fully informed grand juries. They try us for pretended offenses. They arrogantly disregard a Bill of Rights. They have waged war against we the people. They engage in racketeering and extortion through our courts. They hold mock trials in courts not of record. They have put people in debtors' prison. They have removed the Bible and prayers from our schools. They deny our rights to petition the government for a redress of grievances. They deny the right of the people to keep and bear arms. They deny suits at common law. They deny people's heritage. They impose excessive bails, fines, cruel and unusual punishments. They imprison people for behaviors that are not crimes. They deny scores of other unalienable rights retained by the people. They corrupt government at every level and turn sovereignty of the people into a crime. Clearly, these federal criminal judges care nothing about the Constitution or Supreme Court rulings. They are a law unto themselves. The number of lives that they have destroyed are incalculable. They are criminals. They sold their souls to the devil. We the people have no compassion for them, for they are evil. They must be removed, and as long as there are political parties, Congress will never impeach and remove these tyrants. Article 2, Subsection 2, Section 4. The President, I think that should say Clause 2. I better check that out. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for any conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. For these reasons, we the people filed an extraordinary indictment with Attorney General. Now, we looked at that extraordinary indictment a couple of weeks back. We did a presentment, and then we did indictments, and we sent it to Pam Bondi. Pam Bondi, filed an extraordinary indictment with Attorney General Pam Bondi and copied you a true bill against the federal judiciary demanding that the original 13th Amendment, which we attached, that prevents the bar from entering in and destroying our courts of law be acknowledged and enforced. See Exhibit A attached, for it is the law of the land and must be obeyed. As we aforementioned, Congress, because of political parties, are incapable of impeaching these tyrants. And we and I don't think they've ever impeached a judge. And are incapable of impeaching these tyrants. And we are not sure that the office of the presidency can lawfully remove all these tyrants. Maybe under the President's Emergency Powers Act or under Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, to suppress insurrections. For it is an insurrection. But because of the seriousness of this extraordinary assault upon the Republic, common law permits extraordinary action to save our natural law republic, or we will lose it. Whereas we the people have the power to remove these lawless gods via the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of our laws that we the people ordained and established, where we codified, saying, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish government, to institute new government, when a long train of abuses, of usurpations pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new gods. This is the purpose of our extraordinary indictment, a true bill against the federal judiciary dated January 15, 2025, copying you. I should put in here, Mr. President, maybe. I'll make a... copying you, Mr. President, and Attorney General Pam Bondi. This is our rightful power, and we expect that Attorney General Pam Bondi will honor and execute our right to remove these tyrannical federal judges. This is we the people's will, and that becomes an order from the sovereign to Attorney General Pam Bondi. All bar members that wish to lawfully practice law in we the people's courts must separate themselves from the American Bar Association as per Amendment 13 and apply common sense, which is common law in our courts, and stop applying statutes upon the people. We the people expect support from the executive branch and Attorney General Pam Bondi to exercise our unalienable rights to change the federal court guards as stated in our indictment. Because the people are not organized or educated properly to do this themselves, whereas National Liberty Alliance is diligently working on that endeavor to educate and to assist the grassroots to form committees of safety as our founding fathers did to create the United States of America and end political parties. Only with your support, Mr. President, and your administration can we the people exercise our unalienable right to remove all these tyrants and install new gods in our courts, as you are doing in the federal agencies, in all the federal agencies. And once we educate the people at the grassroots in all 3,134 counties on how to exercise their right to have government by consent, then will the people be able to exercise their powers on their own. A desperate need for a proper education. The grand jury is educated. The grand jury is educated and sponsored by National Liberty Alliance, without which we would not have become to be. Civic knowledge and public engagements are an all-time low. A 2016 survey by Annenberg Public Policy Center found that only 26% of Americans can name all three branches of government, which was a significant decline from previous years. Not surprisingly, public trust in government is at only 18%, and voter participation has reached its lowest point since 1996. Without an understanding of the structure of government, our rights and responsibilities, and the different methods of public engagement, civic literacy, and voter apathy will continue to plague our natural law republic. Educators and schools have a unique opportunity and a responsibility to ensure that young people become engaged and knowledgeable citizens. While the 2016 election brought a renewed interest in engagement among youth, only 23% of 8th graders performed at or above the proficient level on a national assessment of educational progress, civic exams, and the achievement levels had virtually stagnated since 1998. The policy solution that has garnered the most momentum to improve civics in recent years is a standard that requires high school students to pass the U.S. citizenship exam before graduation. According to an analysis, 17 states have taken this path. Yet, critics of a mandatory civics exam argued that a citizenship test does nothing to measure comprehension of the material and creates an additional barrier to high school graduation. Wonder who's saying all that, huh? Other states have adopted civics as a requirement for high school graduation, provided teachers with detailed civic curricula, provided community service as a part of graduation requirement, and an increase the availability of advanced placement United States government and politics classes. In August 2021, the ABA adopted a policy urging enactment of the Civic Secures Democracy Act, which is H.R. 1814, and I guess that's S for Senate 879. So this was pushed through by the ABA, and they call it the Democracy Act, okay? The problem concerning the foresaid is in the name, democracy. We are not a democracy. You know, we need President Trump to change this point and bring it back to where it belongs, and this is what the next paragraph is going to address. But we are not a democracy. We are the only natural law republic in the world today, second only to Israel in 1600 B.C., that most bar members are incapable of understanding because they are taught in their bar schools that we are a democracy under civil law fashioned under ancient Rome, just as they were taught in school when they were children, which is incompatible to a republic. They think those who demand the common law in our courts are misinformed crazies, whereas the truth is that they are driven by filthy lucre, which is money, and are misinformed useful idiots because they refuse to reconsider their education in light of the history. Electing our representatives by popular vote does not make us a democracy. It's just the just way to fill political vacancies. They should also take note that the president is not elected by popular vote. All of our political woes are because of political parties. No natural law republic can survive a democracy, as George Washington warned us in his farewell address when he said, "All obstructions to the execution of the law, all combinations and associations, political parties, under whatever plausible character, with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, are destructive of this fundamental principle and of fatal tendencies. They serve to organize factions, an exclusive circle of people with a common purpose, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror concerted and incongruous projects of factions, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interest. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp to themselves the reins of government, destroying afterward the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominion. One method of assault may be in effect in the forms of the Constitution alterations which impair the energy of the system and thus to undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. It is indeed little else than a name where the government is too feeble to withstand the enterprise of faction, to confine each, and that's where we're at right now, to confine each member of the society within the limits prescribed by the laws and to maintain all in the secure and tranquil enjoyment of the rights of the persons and properties. It opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which find a facilitated access to the government itself through channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and the will of another. Okay, and our founding fathers were all in one accord with democracy, and they said they talked a lot about democracy. I'm just going to read one or two of these. We read Edmund Burke, "Of this I am certain, that in a democracy the majority of the citizen is incapable of exercising the most cruel oppression upon the minority." It's capable of exercising the most cruel oppression upon the minority. Thomas Jefferson, "Democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49. Okay, I'm not going to read all this. There's a lot to say about this concerning democracy. Our founding fathers had nothing to do with democracy. You don't find anything other than negative things in the Federalist Papers concerning democracy, and you don't find anything within any of our founding documents concerning democracy. Federal number 1 talks about it. Federal number 10 talks about the destruction, the problems of democracy. In 10, it says, Madison says, democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention. They have ever been found incapable, incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. And that's where we're heading until Trump came around. Okay, I only see one person in the queue, so I'll continue for a few more minutes. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. If you have an, if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button there. Considering the events of today and after the tsunami of evidence concerning treason and crimes against humanity that is about to be revealed, and after all the dust settles, maybe we can take the opportunity to educate the people to do away with political parties, and only then will our representatives in Washington City represent their constituents and not party bosses and special interest groups, without which this will never happen. And this is an extremely important point that's being made here. If there were no party bosses and there was no special interest groups, guess what? Our representatives would be representing the constituents, and they'd all have their own points of view to bring up and vote accordingly. I'm going to skip the Jefferson quotes and the Madison quotes. There's quite a few good quotes here. I'm going to post this on the front page after I get this out tomorrow. I'm going to be serving it tomorrow. A natural law republic requires the people to become educated and acknowledge God of all the blessings he has bestowed upon America. Our children must learn to give back in order to have... Our children must learn to give back in order to have government by consent under a natural law republic. If we, the people, fail to properly educate our children and teach them of their unalienable rights of government by consent and how to exercise it, then unprincipled men will enslave us again. It's only a matter of time, and we will be right back under the tyrants again. Because unfortunately, we are plagued with evil psychopaths and sociopaths that seek power, whose hearts are desperately wicked, and a proper education will help to discern them. The federal government should require any school that receives federal funds, and this is one of the things we're asking Trump to do, federal government should require any school that receives federal funding to provide a well-rounded, proper natural law education, instructing our children in civics, their heritage, our judicial process and structure, due process, unalienable rights, American history, political process, militia, government by consent, and morals. Under this branch of knowledge, we can teach our children a positive view of themselves, their relationship with their maker, their duties as a citizen, self-discipline, self-motivation, without which they will never be able to achieve their dreams and live at their fullest potential. If the people are fully informed of their heritage, the wool will never again be pulled over their eyes, as it have with us, because of our ignorance. Presently, National Liberty Alliance has already taken on the task of informing and educating the people, teaching how to have government by consent, offering the following courses: Foundation Study, Introduction to the Constitution, Civics Course, Government by Consent, Militia Course, Jury Administrators Course, Court Access and the Common Law Course. NLA is also interested in writing textbooks for grades K through 12. and is presently seeking financial support. These books will be authored by accomplished author John Darash, NLA co-founder and author of the aforesaid courses and websites, and accomplished author Brent Allen Winters, a practicing common law lawyer, and a number of other highly skilled people in this branch of knowledge that will approach to assist. Knowledge that will approach to assist in this behavior. A number of other highly skilled people in this branch of knowledge that we will approach to assist in this endeavor. John Darash, author of 10 books titled Government by Consent, Court Access in the Common Law, Study of Parables in the Book of Revelation, Common Law Grand Jury Pocket Handbook, Common Law Pettigrew Handbook, Pocket Handbook, Committee of Safety Committeeman Pocket Handbook, County Committee of Safety Organizing Pocket Handbook, County Sheriff Pocket Handbook, Founding Documents Pocket Handbook, Common Law Court Pocket Handbook, and working on 3 other books yet to be published. For book details, go to NLA, National Liberty Alliance. Brent Allen Winters, teacher and author and of 11 books titled The Common Law Lawyer's Bible, 5 volumes, Family Bible, Excellence of the Common Law, Militia of the Several States, Clause-by-Clause Comments on the U.S. Constitution and Declaration of Independence, Juris Handbook, and Don't Talk to the Police. For book details, you go to commonlawyer.com. Let me fix this while I'm here. Okay, in closing, Mr. President, we hope that you and your administration will take the time to consider our solution, empower the people, and work with we the people to solve these problems in our federal courts and get the word out to the people the availability of a proper education. And then, of course, presented to the President of the United States under seal. I got to fix that. And I'm going to add a little more in this section here. I'm going to think about that in the morning, and there's another sentence or two I want to put in here. And I want to be clear. I may, recap the main points and the bullet points of the conclusions of what we're really looking to have the President do. And all of these things really have to be done in order to bring us back under the Constitution. If we ignore any of these things, then we're allowing evil to continue within our government structure. Okay, that's pretty much it. And again, I'll clean this up and put it out tomorrow morning sometime. Probably by the afternoon it'll probably actually go out. If anybody has any thoughts or comments on this, we'd like to hear from anybody right now. So we're going to open the queue. The queue's open. There's 3 people in the queue. Anybody else wants to get in, *6 and 1. If you're on a phone and if you're on an app or browser, should be a button. Okay, we'll take our first person question. It looks like Sean from California. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Let me try that again. Didn't look like it took. Okay, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Sean.
Hi, John. It's me, Sean, the lady you referenced. I was here 2 weeks ago, and I couldn't make it last week.
Oh, okay. You know what I want, if you can, is send me a, if you can write a paper on this, almost like an affidavit form. I just need to get the picture of the story a little more.
Okay, so I did send you a couple of documents. I sent them to Jan that very day, and I confirmed with Jan a few days later, and he said he forwarded it to you. So I don't know if you received
missed it. Yeah, I get so much mail, and I skim through a lot.
I understand.
Sometimes I go days without looking at my
email.
Which
is why I follow up. So, but I did send it to you immediately because I'm very interested in, I know in the Holy Spirit, I know you can help. I know you can help. And
well,
we need the help.
The details, the names and the courts and the prison, and make sure you give me all that stuff if you can get, send it directly to me.
Tell me how to get a hold of you directly.
Well, you can send it to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I will specifically make sure I look for that. Sometimes I don't look at a lot of that mail because I just don't have the time. Trust that leadership here do look at that. But send it today. I don't want to put my regular email out because I don't.
I understand.
But I need to have the specifics, and then I will probably put the specifics into this paper. I was hoping
I know, and you mentioned that, and that's what I was hoping as well. So I did send that, like I said, and I will send it again as soon as we get off the line here.
Hey, make sure you put your phone number in there. I can give you a call.
I did. Yep, I did. I don't know if there's anything you can say right now or if you just want to move on and then just wait till you receive the information again. But
yeah, and we'll talk again maybe next week. I'll let you know. And again, we'll be posting this paper by the end of the day tomorrow. I should have it completed being filed, and then we'll post it. Okay?
Okay. Yes, and I was in closing, I won't take up everybody's time, but I did, I was very transparent, you know, with you, and because I, you made the comment earlier, maybe this person did deserve the sentence, and he definitely deserved to pay a severe punishment because the crimes were heinous, but like I said 2 weeks ago, there were no the factors weren't mitigated. So he was severely abused from birth up until the time that he committed the crimes at 19 years old, and just horrible, horrible abuse. And,
make sure you mention all those things.
I did. Yeah, I did.
I don't want to spend too much more time.
No worries. Yeah, it's fine.
We can talk again next week.
Sure.
And by the way, let me correct what I said. I'm not going to post this for a couple of days because I'm going to ask the people, we need to get this out. We need to get all our papers out.
Right.
And once this paper is posted, people should get this posted everywhere they can.
Yes.
So we need the people to get this word out. We're not getting things out as much as we should, and maybe that's part of my fault for not asking people to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for those who are not helping us financially, we can really use your help, so please consider giving us some donation. We ask people to give us $5 a month or more.
I am a member. I do give $10 a month, and I'm happy to give more. I really support this cause. I really believe that you are the answer to significant change. It seems like you have all the information and you're doing all the right things, and I'm happy to be a part of this. And I also, like I said, I feel the Holy Spirit just led me to your organization. I can't even remember how I got here, but I know that this right here is the answer to getting my husband out of prison. I know it is.
Okay, we appreciate that. But anyway, we do need have financial help, and even just the one-time thing from people, that's good. But people need to support what we're doing. Tomorrow I'm going to be spending a lot of money on getting out this information to about 30 or 40 individuals, people particularly in the administration. Trump is directed towards Trump, but we're also Bondi, the Attorney General, and numerous congressmen and senators who we've been copying all this paperwork to. So, again, we need to get these people support them up. And really, I'm watching a little bit on what Musk is doing, and he's talking about the courts because they're trying to prevent him from going into, concerning, all of his, looking into U.S. aid and other agencies. They're trying to shut him down from that. They're not going to succeed in that. But the thing is Musk is a reader. Okay, he is. I sent him a copy of our book, Government by Consent, about a week ago, and he should have it by now, hopefully. And copied on all these papers we've been sending out, so we've been educating him. But he's one of the very few non-lawyers. Trump's a non-lawyer, too.
Right.
And those are the individuals who will understand what we're talking about very quickly. Lawyers have a problem understanding what we're talking about because it's contrary to everything they think and do, and they built their lives around civil law and the way that they go through the process, quoting these different court cases, trial court cases that have nothing to do with anything, self-serving and disgusting. And this is the problem we have. But if we can get, these people who are not lawyers and they realize what's going on, then we'll expect that if they really understand this, they're going to badger those who don't understand it to force them to look. And that's the way we're going to become successful, I think.
Right. Okay, I'll be in touch.
Let me move on. We'll talk again next week. Get that information. Give me your phone number and that.
I will.
And I'll probably give you a call if I have any questions.
I would appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, let's take our next caller here. We got John from Michigan. How you doing, John? Good to see you.
Hey, good. Thank you. Hey, I got to say, Sean, I think as her name is very, very well spoken. I'm very impressed just with her demeanor and her speech and her voice and everything. I'm very impressed, so it's good. Hey, question. You're going to send this out to Trump and that. You know, who is the gatekeeper for him? Do you have any idea if he even sees this stuff?
Well, I do believe, first of all, this is a presentment. It'll be labeled on the envelope as legal papers, so his lawyers will get it, and I think they will deliver it to him, because it's a presentment. It's a crime for them to prevent the presentment from a common law grand from the grand jury to the President of the United States, just as much as it would be the same thing for those who would prevent it getting to the Supreme Court or any place other. But we've been sending his things down to Mar-a-Lago, so it's going directly to him. It's not going through Washington. We sent papers in the past for many years now, and going back particularly. But we've sent papers in during his first administration, but it went to Washington, and maybe he didn't get them. I don't know. But I do believe he's getting them. Someone suggested a couple of weeks or a month ago that we should also copy Barron Trump, his son, and that Barron Trump has been instrumental in some of the people that he's been working with by bringing attention to different things. So he seems to be an individual who's curious and educated, and so I sent Barron Trump also a book about a week ago, and we've been copying Barron Trump a couple of weeks. I copied everything we've been copying recently and sent him a copy also. So, you know, his son seems to have a lot of influence on his father to consider and look at things. So that idea was brought to my attention, and I thought it was a good idea. So, again, another route or way. You know, and again, you know, he seems to be very close with Musk, and Musk is a really ferocious reader, and he tears things apart, gets deep into things, self-educated in many ways, and I think he's a good person that could influence the president as long as we can get the info to him, and we've been sending it to him also, so. We have to get, and this is up to the people also, because it's up to you, everybody that's hearing this message. They need to get this paper out. And the paper's on our front page, as a matter of fact, and this is where I will post these papers. The important papers of today right now are posted right here. The presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. This is where it all started, at least recently. Okay. The second is the addendum to the grand jury presentment. The third is the indictment upon the federal judiciary and all judges, where we exercised our right under common law, and we codified in the Declaration of Independence that we have the right to change gods when they become destructive. And they certainly have become destructive to us, to our liberty, to our Constitution, to our way of life, to our very form of republic, a common law republic. And so right here underneath that, is where I'm going to post this next paper. And like I said, I'm going to retard this a couple of days before I put it up. I'm not going to put it up tomorrow. I'm going to wait 2 or 3 days. But I do want people to circulate this. And the reason why I want to wait 2 or 3 days is because I don't want this to circulate and get out there before it gets to the president himself. Okay, with that, what else you got, John?
The trial by jury, and I just want to make sure that everybody understands that there's the trial by jury is different than a jury trial. What we're after is a trial by jury. That's the common law. So other people, I think, made a mistake of saying they want a jury trial. When they go to court, they want a trial by jury. That's to get your common law jury there. So,
well, you know, you do make a point, because all of our juries are tainted and they are stacked, all of them, whether they're trial juries or common law trial juries or you know, which is a petit jury, or a grand jury. And one of the things that I've done now, and in my paperwork for about a year or two now, is I've added to not only memorandums to my case. I always put memorandums, trying to keep the paperwork clean, give the main point of law, and then refer to the memorandums of law to embellish on the meaning of these things. But also, I add a copy in PDF form, not in a handbook form, but in a PDF form, a copy of the handbook, which really is the handbook for the trial jury. Okay,
right.
Empowers them, and by adding that handbook, okay, to the attaching it, okay, brings it into the trial, and if the bar attorneys are brain dead, and basically they are. Okay, and they don't really think too much about what was added on that, and they don't rebut it to make an argument prior to the actual trial, then it's part of the record, and anything that's part of the record can be brought up and addressed to the jury in the trial. And I would be working on, I haven't done this yet, but maybe I will. Well, I will eventually do this anyway. And especially if I go to trial somewhere, I'll definitely get this done. I'm going to do a PowerPoint. And a PowerPoint will be an instruction to the jury to free them and to make them free and independent. And they would go crazy with that. They try to stop it. And if we have corrupt courts, they will stop it. Because right now, we don't have juries that are properly informed. They need to understand their power and authority. They need to understand that they got the power to nullify anything that they don't like. They need to understand that they not only decide the facts, they decide the law. They say what the law is. If they don't like the law, they can nullify it. They also have the power and authority. It is their job to decide what the penalty is, with an eye on restitution of the injured party. And they're the ones that decide whether the individual should also go to jail or not. And in order to restore individuals, ultimately, we do need to keep these people out of prison, but they need to, you know, earn money and do what they got to do to survive for themselves, but also to restore the injured party. That is the key to the whole thing. They can't be restricted. You know, we could put those rings on their legs. They can be held at, house arrest. We have that technology. I know of some people that have been on that, where they're restricted from leaving certain areas, they're restricted from being out after a certain time, and they're able to go to work. So anyway, restitution is the key focus for really any court of law when you have an injured party.
You know, Red Beckman and Bill Benson years back, they wrote a book on the law, and that was the first time really thing I read about the juries, the common law jury, grand jury and the common penal jury. Very good. I mean, if you ever get a chance to read those things, or I would encourage people to read those too. But
yeah, I've seen some of the videos. I think on Red Beckman, I think his name you said.
Red Beckman and Bill Benson. Yeah, Benson is one that wrote the Law That Never Was.
Yeah, I've got both volumes of that.
Yeah.
And so. Also, there's we have this up on a website, Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner. I think it's under education. I think it's under articles and essay. Let's see. Yeah, Trial by Jury essay right here.
Right.
And so people, this is also in audio. So people can read along with it. You can click on the PDF and read along with the PDF, the MP3, so you can download or just listen to the MP3s online, whatever the case may be.
Well, there's so much in the website here. I mean, people don't even realize that, but I mean, if you just read about the jury and read the book Governed by Consent, they would have a real good framework to put everything else on. I mean, because a lot of people fight with that, I think, in their own minds. But if you have a framework, and whenever you read something, it'll fill in the framework, and then you know where you're really at on the thing. Because this is what's been happening is disgusting. I'm kind of excited to be alive right now with all the stuff that's going on in Washington, where they're every day they're stepping on them. I'm thinking it's about time, because I'm tired of getting stepped on. I want to see somebody else stepped on. So.
Yeah, I hear you on that. It's time for justice, and that's what's coming. And we're going to see it piled on more. It's going to build up more and more. There's so much to be released.
Oh, they don't know which way to turn. He just keeps dumping on them. And they asked him a question the other day about something, and he, instead of defending it or defending himself on the thing, he said, yeah, he wants to talk to Elon again, and he wants to, another 24 hours he's going to do that and going against the education, and he's going to go to the Army. I'm going, go get him. It's funny to hear him scream, so this is good.
Well, Stephanie, there was a new thing out there. CNN put this out, that 70%, and CNN put it out, 70% of the people agree that Trump is fulfilling what he said he would do. So he's got a lot of support. That shows us that a lot of Democrats have been woken up. And, you know, there'll always be a small percentage, maybe 5 to 10%, that are just totally brain dead. And it's going to take a heck of a lot to wake them up. And, you know, but the people that are yelling the loudest, as Q says and others say, they're the ones that are the worst. And we see them out all day. It's unbelievable that they think that they can try to change the position of the people when all of this evil stuff is being revealed. You know, they're really only drawing more attention to themselves.
And we finally have the press secretary for the White House, the one lady that they had that was for Biden, she would never give an answer. She was brain dead in herself or anything. The new one, she'll answer questions. She goes right at them. It's just a beautiful thing. I'm happy. How's that sound?
Yep. Well, you know, we knew it was going to happen. Those of us who've been watching and listening, we've been seeing it coming, and we know. And look at, I think the big drop's going to be in 2 months. It's going to be less than 2 months now, probably, you know, probably 6 or 7 weeks at most, 6 weeks, I'd say. Because when I do believe that when by 6 weeks, all of his people will be in place, and they'll be working already within all of these federal agencies, cleaning them out and getting rid of all the waste and doing all the things they have to do. But it'll be about 6 weeks from now when the Kennedy files will be dropped and the Martin Luther King files will be dropped. And at that point, I think that's when they're going to drop everything, all the pedophilia. All these people out there yelling and screaming, they're going to go try to hide under a rock with all the evil that's going to be and all the revealing of all the money where it's really been going, the kickbacks. And the president is talking about kickbacks. We got to look in there because it looks like some people are getting kickbacks here, you know. So, you know, $100 million of condoms for, what's that terrorist group? $100 million so they can have condoms, you know. I guess they were trying to prevent them from reproducing. I don't know.
I think that was, they were using them to put plastic explosive stuff in. I'm thinking that's what I heard about that. But, sorry, but yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, John. Thanks a lot.
Okay,
we'll take our next caller. Evelyn, you got the mic right ahead. What state you're from, Evelyn?
Hi, John. New York State.
Oh, Evelyn. How you doing?
Yes, thank you. And I would really like to collaborate with you on some of the language that's in there. We can talk about that later.
Hey, you got my number.
I can email you. Yeah.
Why don't you give me a call tomorrow? Maybe around, I don't know, 9, 10 o'clock if you have time, and we can talk.
At 10 o'clock would be better than 9. Well,
yeah, that'd be fine. I'll be at my desk working on this paper. But the earlier the better, because at some point I'm going to be working on this paper by maybe 11, 12
right.
o'clock, printing it out, and so by the end
yeah,
of the
day. Yeah, because I was wondering if you were going to put it out as a Word document, but that's probably
It'll be put up
yeah.
as a PDF.
Okay, so number two, Pam Bondi is a lawyer, so I wonder whether there's a little bit of education or sending her the book to help her get prepped. Number three, let's see. Okay, she's already got it. Okay. So what is your timeline on sending this out?
Tomorrow.
Sending it out, there's such two levels to sending it out literally to the president and the other
individuals.
You're going to wait 3 days. Okay.
Yeah, I got to look at the financial situation. Definitely get it to the major players tomorrow and maybe wait a few days or a week to get to the rest of them. But I might be able to send it all out tomorrow. That's my intention. That's my focus.
Again, yeah,
we're
I really think supported by, really is important. There's some editing and some nuances in there that I think need to be real.
Tomorrow we'll go through that. But, you know, again, let me just make the point, you know, we are totally, you know, we count on donations to do all the work we do and the sales of books, you know. I mean, you know, we have the books that I've written. Everything that comes in goes into National Liberty Alliance, at least at this point. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. I have a little extra money I'm able to take for myself for my living. But all of my books help to support NLA, so anybody who buys a book is supporting us. Same thing with our education. Anybody who comes into our court access in the common law course, that helps to support also what we're doing. And those who are given $5 a month or more, I mean, really, that is probably some mm-hmm. of the most important, I call it income, that supports us, the donations, because it's consistent, it's constant, and it's not a lot, but it's every, you know, enough comes in a month to really be helpful.
Mm-hmm. You know? Have you been
to... There are some people, by the way, I'd like to say...
Oh, I have a question. Mm-hmm.
In a minute. There are some people, though, I'd like to say that are very helpful, financially speaking. There's some people that send $1,000, $1,500 occasionally. There are some mm-hmm. people give a couple of $100 a month, and a couple of people from time to time might give $500 or $800. But majority of people given to us is $5, sometimes $10 or $20. But believe me, you know, the widow's mite, so to speak, kind of right. think of it that way. Really helps supporting and keeping the money flow to come in to pay the bills, keep the lights on, and do these papers. You know, we spend a lot of money on reams of paper. I get boxes, 10 reams at a time. We go through many boxes a year. And of course, the toner and ink, you know, for the copy machines, that becomes very expensive. We use a lot of that. So, and then the mailings, all of that is cost. So... any help people can give, that would be helpful. Appreciate it. But back to you, Evelyn.
Yeah. Just speaking on based on my experience when sending documents or information to Washington, D.C., I found that even though it was very expensive, a certified mailing works better. And then sometimes I even got a response. So, written response. So, from the executive branch. So, that's just a suggestion. I know that adds on another layer of money, you know, outlay.
Mm-hmm. I see your email out there. So, upload tonight's program, I'll send you a copy through the email of this paper in Word. Then you can give me a call tomorrow, maybe 10 o'clock or so. Try not to do it much later than 10 because, you know, it takes a while to print all this stuff, put it together, and get it out. You know, 10, 11 o'clock. I'd like to definitely be printing by at least noon, if possible, be able to get it out in time.
Yeah, I'm working until 10, but I'll see what I can do.
All right, well, if you work till 10 and you can look at this maybe for an hour or so and then give me a call.
Yeah.
At 11.
You're going to send it out tonight, yes?
I'm going to pop as soon as we end the program tonight,
okay.
I'll start uploading the program. And once it's uploaded,
okay.
It takes 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll drop it in the mail.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Evelyn. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
Okay, and I think we're set for the meeting on not this Thursday, but the following Thursday after, down in Poughkeepsie there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks
Great.
For the call. Okay, we'll take our next and last caller, Mike G. You got the mic. What state you're from, Mike?
California.
Mike from California. Go right ahead, Mike.
So I had that long writing question. Let me just ask you this. Because these people they tried to audit them and these things, but they didn't take them into district court or file anything against them. They filed the lawsuit in the state Supreme Court against...
Who filed the lawsuit? You don't have to give the names of the people. You know, why are you in a state court? I don't understand that.
To file a claim against the agents and all the people that have been pursuing them.
Right, just to let you know that is a good way to start in the state court anyway. But you rest assured they're going to move it into the federal court. How long ago did you file it?
It was on January 17th it was filed.
Really? And you're a federal and they haven't moved it into federal court yet? Who are you suing, though? What's their positions in government that you're suing?
Three IRS agents, one IRS attorney, two employees from a credit union that sees their money without the warrant based on IRS sending the notice of lien, and one of their employers that withheld.
Has there been any response at all from them yet?
Yes. The two people that work for the credit union hired a bar attorney, and they put in a notice of appearance last Monday. And that's it.
Okay, I am really surprised. Are you sure you got it properly sent out to the other two individuals from the IRS?
Yes, it was served by the sheriff.
And a federal attorney did not respond and move it into federal court yet. I'm very surprised at that.
Well, she's in Oregon. Where all this happened is in Washington, but the IRS agents are all in Washington, three of them, but the IRS attorney is in Oregon. And so
it doesn't matter where they're at. The IRS does not want any of their people that is employed by them to end up in state court. They want to get into federal court so they can control the case.
I heard you say that during the course, so that's what I'm wondering, because their 20 days is up on Wednesday, and then the IRS attorney's up on Friday.
Wow. And that's how many days? How many days is that number? 30, 20, or what?
They get 20 days from the day they're served, yeah. And that'll be up on Wednesday and Friday of this week, the 12th and the 14th, for all the IRS.
You're counting from the actual day after they're served. Like if they were served on the, if they got it on the 9th, then you start counting on the 10th. Okay, so you're counting the day after they actually received it, not the day that you mailed it.
Yeah, the day after, and then that would be 20 days, you know, like I said, this week.
Okay, and you clearly put 20 days on it.
Yes. See, they filed it into the court, and the court, either the clerk or the judge, I can't be there because I'm in California, I'm not sure how it works, but either the clerk or the judge signed off on the lawsuit being filed or the action and the summons to be issued.
But you served it with a summons?
Yes, yeah, yes.
Right, that's important, because if you don't send the summons, you go through all this and they don't respond, it never really was actually served, they'll throw it out. But that's good. You got the summons in there. All right. Well, sounds good. You got any other questions on this or clarification?
Yeah. If they don't respond, so one question I have is, since the two people from the credit union have a lawyer representing them now, and they filed in that notice of appearance, if they don't, does that somehow waive them from having to answer the lawsuit within 20 days?
Well, a notice of appearance is one thing, so they appeared, but no, they have to respond also within that time period, and if they don't, then they default.
If they don't respond by Wednesday and Friday, respectively, we could get a default judgment against them?
They defaulted too, depending. How was your wherefore clause? Is it long, and can you read it?
We use Bill Thornton's. It's sort of long. It's a different format than yours. We got this before I found out about NLA and started the course. I would do it differently now, but no, it's very clear.
Okay. All right, as long as your wherefore clause is very clear in defining exactly what you're looking for, maybe, and this is filed, the lawsuit against them, because they came out and took money out of the banks, right? They went and served the banks and took money from them, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and did the bank make notification 7 days prior to their taking the money? Did you get any notice from the federal government, from the IRS, whatever individuals that served these things, did you get any notice, 7-day notice, that they had done this, whether they intended to do this?
I have to check with them on that. I'm not totally clear on that. There's a lot of stuff that happened.
The way the system works is they have to let you know, and usually the bank will do that. The bank will send out and say, hey, we received a notice of a lien, blah, 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 for X amount of dollars to be applied upon this account, blah, 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 blah. And basically what they're doing is they're giving you a 7-day notice, and if you don't respond and deny that execution of the notice of judgment or notice of lien, there is no lien. It's just a notice of lien. It doesn't exist, you know. But the banks, they're ignorant. They don't know the difference between a notice of lien or a lien. But they got to give you 7 days notice. And if they don't, and within that 7 days, if you respond and certify your mail back to that bank, and say no, you disagree. Do not send the money to the IRS. Blah blah blah. That's the law. Whether they obey that or not is another thing. But the thing is, it's something you need to know, because you can bring it up in court if you haven't received notice concerning that lien filing. In other words, when they tried to lien me, they actually knocked on my door and served me a paper and said that we are intending on filing a lien against you within the 7 days unless you pay up. And I immediately responded and prevented all that from happening. So they were unable to lien anything of mine. And then I sued them in court and I did the same thing. Well, hold on. In that case, I went straight to the federal court. I don't think I went to the state court. I learned that a little later. But in any event, I won that case against the IRS.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we can win this one as well. So you sued them individually, right?
Yeah, you sued the individual, you know. If you look at my paperwork, you know, it's very specific on the law that they once they step outside of their authority, they lose all protection of the law. You can't sue an individual that's acting within the authority of the law.
Right.
And since USC 26 is not law to begin with, and even if it was, it's repugnant, you know, there's nothing they really can do. So, you know, they cannot or should not be able to do that. So
after they're defaulted, do we just create a default judgment and an order for the magistrate to sign?
Yes, you create an order. You put together a default filing with the judgment with the clerk, okay, and you attach to that a paper for the judge's signature. Which is the specifics. It addresses the very details within the wherefore clause. You could take that directly to the judge himself. You can go to his chambers, you can see his clerk, and you'll let the clerk know you wanted to see the judge for this purpose, that you have a default judgment that you just filed with the clerk, and you're carrying all the paperwork up to him for signature for execution for the sheriff. And then you take it to the sheriff, who will then go out and execute it.
So at this stage of the game, we could just draw that up and go have the judge sign it, and once we're at 21 days, the judge may sign it, right?
Well, the judge by law has to sign it, not to say that he will sign it, because they're all evil.
Right. And if he was to not sign it, then what would be our recourse?
Well, I would first of all like to know why he wouldn't sign it, and whatever he says, again, you have to hear what he has to say. But I can't think of any good reasoning why he wouldn't sign it, lawfully, that is. I don't have problems suing judges. I sue the judge.
Gotcha. Well, hopefully he would just sign it, because we did everything according to...
If he doesn't sign it, and he doesn't have anything lawful... You know, whatever they come up and say when you do this, I'd like to hear about this. So keep us on a Monday night program. Come back and let us know. If he doesn't sign it and he doesn't have any good cause, because I can't think of anything, because they haven't responded, then I would then sue the judge for denial of due process in federal court.
Sure. Well, hopefully he will just sign it, because we did do, I mean, we used their sheriffs for service. We filed it with them. We followed due process all the way through. They just haven't answered because we have so much proof and evidence in there. I don't think that they want to go in front of a jury because they know they don't have the answer.
If they pull you into the federal court, they'll railroad you there. You'll never get to, that'll never get to before a jury. And you'll be cast out of court one way or another, because that's what they do. I've been in so many of these cases. Look, the only reason I won my case is a couple of positions I had and brought into the case, I don't think anyone brought up before. And there's two or three positions, so I'm not too sure which one of those three positions that really affected them. But they didn't have a plan against them, I guess, at that point. Plus, it was a little earlier on. This is going back, I'm trying to think, maybe 10, 12, no, I don't think it's been 12 years. Maybe it was 10 years ago. Maybe it was 12 years ago. It was a while back. And, you know, since then, they probably have created a defense against the kind of thing that I brought up to them. And also, you know, they're a lot more bolder. You know, every year they get bolder and bolder, because they just take the next step, the next step, the next step, and violate you over and over and over again, and then they feel more and more comfortable. So it just gets worse, and it has gotten worse. I mean, you know, even to the point to say something like the Constitution doesn't apply here, you know, like in a USC 26 court, a USC 26 court, they would say something like that.
Wow. So if they have on their cover sheet to file the lawsuit, they don't have any option for common law. And the clerk needs to check off civil genius.
I copied the basic paper, which probably applies in every state. Okay, let me think. Was that on a federal level? I don't remember. It may have been on the state level. But what I did is I took their paperwork for filing, where you have to do to check the boxes, and I redone it exactly the way they did, but I added in common law trial by jury in it.
You can do that?
Well, that's what I did. I have that. Why not? I have that up in our course. There's a copy of that on our course.
Yeah, I'm not all the way through it yet. I just started. I'm trying to get things
started. Since you sound to have a little bit of a background of knowledge of some of this stuff, you know, and you're in court, you know, you may be able to really glean a lot of stuff by going through the table of context. You know, I'll show you on, let's see, you're on a computer, you're seeing my screen, right?
Yes.
Okay, if you go into the course, Court Access and the Common Law, and you come to the table of contents, okay, you can skim through here and probably pick up something here that might be helpful for you as you skim through. And there is a section in here where we do deal with dealing with the IRS in here, and also from changing the paperwork and adding in to their paperwork the common law trial by jury.
Thanks for that. I'm going to study that. I haven't been in there, seen everything yet, because I just started the course.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, we're running over. You got a final statement, because we're going to close down?
No, I'll just update you. We'll just try for our default judgments, and I'll just call back in and update you guys what happened.
Yeah, interesting to see what happens and how it goes, and hear what your wherefore clause was. And we'll talk another time on that.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate the call. Okay, with that, we've come to the end, and Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. And again, once this paper gets up there on our website, on the front page, right on our welcome page, people should try to get all these papers out. Not just the paper we're filing right now. I think this is first and foremost right now anyway, but also these other papers that we filed, the presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court, the addendum to the grand jury presentment, and then the indictment to the, upon the federal judiciary to remove these tyrants and replace them with new gods. And then, of course, the paper we've written today, which is going to the president, and that one, we'd like to get all these papers really out anywhere and everywhere they can go. Meanwhile, people can get these other three pages out right now, wherever you can share them, any place where there's conversation going on, that you could drop a paper or any individual, podcasters, anybody. And maybe they'll call up and ask for to interview us, and that'll get more word out, and more people will become more educated in how to have government by consent. All right, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.